Okay, we will call this meeting, the first meeting of 2012 of our House Health and Human Services Reform Committee to order. A little bit of housekeeping, but very important. I want to take a moment right now, if we could kind of come to order, to welcome the newest member of our committee, Representative Susan Allen.
Thank you.
Is a brand new member both of the House and of our committee. And Representative Allen, I want to welcome you to the committee. If you'd like to take just a moment to share a little bit, I know you didn't, I didn't prepare this with you, but if you want to take just a moment to let us know a little bit about you and why you have an interest in this area, this would be a good time to do it. But welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Susan Allen. I'm the newest member, and I'm from District 61, South Minneapolis. And as you all know, we have probably half of our children living in poverty, and so many unmet needs. And so this is a very important committee for me to be on for our district. Thank you.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. And I mentioned earlier the people to my left and right here are fabulous, or at least one of them was to my left. But we're here to help you out. Okay. We also have a new DFL researcher, I understand, Christine Morgan. Even if she's not here right now, we want to welcome her to the committee. So, Christine, wherever you are, welcome. I wanted to mention that the committee rules for this committee are once again a fresh copy put in your folders. I encourage members once again, just as we're kind of coming back to a new session, to take a look at the committee rules, familiarize yourselves with them. If you have any questions, be sure and see me or Holly or Shirley. I'm sorry, Christine, do you want to say anything? Welcome to the committee.
My name is Lucy Morgan.
Thank you. Oh, Lucy, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's our mistake. Lucy Morgan, welcome to the committee. You want to give us a little background on yourself? Or?
I worked at the state senate for 3 years for a senator and who was not reelected in the last election cycle. I have a Master of Social Work degree, which is, and I worked in many social service industries, so.
Very good. Well, welcome to the committee. Also a reminder to members, we're kind of on a fast pace here in this session, as you know, and so I would encourage you, if you have ideas for bills, introduce them early. Earlier is better, okay? Today's presentation on the peer provider grouping program is focused on the runs that were done in September. It is not about the program or program policy. We had some confusion among some people who thought that we were debating policy around the program today. That's really not what this is. This is a informational hearing primarily. We want to hear from the Department of Health about what they are doing with the PPG program right now. And then we're also going to have an opportunity to hear from two of the main groups who are impacted by the measures that the Department of Health is putting together. I know the department is trying very hard to make sure this is done right. And we're going to try to hold them to that as well. So we also have some testimony in your folders today from Twyla Brace. And so I would ask you to reference that as well, written testimony. But again, this is an informational hearing about where the Department of Health is at as far as the PPG program and some feedback about where they're at right now. With that, I will welcome Commissioner Ellinger to the committee. Commissioner Ellinger. We'll go about a half an hour with your presentation, and then we have 15 minutes. The Minnesota Hospital Association, Minnesota Medical Association, will provide some comments for about 15 minutes. At the end, we'll allow about 15 minutes for member questions, and then our goal is to get out of here by 3:30. We know there are some other things that members want to get to. So, Dr. Ellinger, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health. Thank you for inviting the department to come before you today to talk about our work on increasing the accuracy and transparency of cost and quality data related to healthcare. Now, I'm pleased to be here on the opening day of the session to talk about this really important topic. With me today are Diane Reidrich, Director of the Division of Health Policy, and Stefan Gildemeister, Director of our Health Economics Program. I will provide some brief general overview comments, and then I will turn it over to them to provide more detailed description of what's going on.
Dr. Ellinger, I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment. We do have a quorum now, members, so we will officially call the meeting to order. We do have minutes to approve, and I'm sure somebody has read them very thoroughly and would like to move approval. Representative Fritz moves approval. These are the minutes of May 4th, 2011, and October 24th, 2011. Representative Fritz is moving both of those. Any questions or comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Ellinger, back to you.
All right, thank you very much. As you all know, Minnesota ranks at or near the top on many measures of healthcare quality. We are fortunate to live in a state that is home to many committed healthcare providers and to healthcare facilities that are renowned for their excellence. And we could go into many activities that we've done over the years as a state that really focuses on the transparency that is here, that is the collaboration that occurs between the health department and human services and the clinics and providers. But we won't go into all of that collaboration that we have and the transparency. But we will go into the fact that we always have to keep moving forward, to always aspiring to do better. We have to find ways to slow the healthcare costs, or the burden of disease costs will become unsustainable in this state. We also have to make sure that we have to keep a spotlight on quality improvement. These are the goals that are really at the hearts and minds of everybody who has developed Minnesota's healthcare reform initiatives over the last several years. In 2008, legislators from both parties joined the governor to pass a slate of Minnesota-specific reform initiatives designed to further increase transparency about costs and quality, to transform how we purchase health care, and to rethink care delivery and health status improvement. Together, these initiatives aim at improving the health of all Minnesotans, enhancing the patient experience, and controlling health care costs. Today, we're here to talk about one of those Minnesota reform initiatives in more detail. That is the Provider Peer Grouping, or PPG. PPG is designed to change the way consumers and payers think about and purchase healthcare by introducing the concept of value. Through PPG, we are systematically developing a mechanism to compare providers on a combined measure of cost and quality. This will illustrate the variability in cost and quality that exists across the state, give consumers an important tool to use in making decisions about where to seek care. This is complex and difficult work. You'll hear more from Ms. Reidrich and Mr. Gildemeister about some of the challenges that we have gone through in recent months as we work to produce something that is completely new for Minnesota and for the United States, but that is also actionable for consumers and purchasers. You'll hear about how we have addressed those challenges by modifying our timeline and some aspects of our methodology, how we plan to continue working with stakeholders around the state as we move towards a public release of this information at a summary level this spring and at an individual hospital level by the end of the year, and how we plan to keep you informed of our progress in this work. This is truly nation-leading work, and it provides us an opportunity to transform both how consumers make decisions about their care and how purchasers play a role in this through value-based benefit design. True to the department's long-standing values, and from my years and experience as a clinician, a clinic director, and a public health professional, I understand how important it is to produce a product that is accurate, that is understandable, and that is actionable for both providers and consumers. The department is committed to doing just that. This work will continue to move forward through 2012, and I'm confident in the team that we have now assembled to lead this work. And I'm confident in the process that we will go through over the coming months to bring this to fruition. So thank you for the opportunity to present this work for you today, and I look forward to continuing working with you in the coming months. And I'll turn it over to Stefan and Diane to continue with the presentation.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Ellinger. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Diane Reidrich. I'm the director of the Division of Health Policy at MDH. And in the interest of making sure we really focus on what the committee wants to hear related to recent events, there are a couple of slides that we'll probably pass over relatively quickly and not talk too much about, but you do have them in your handouts if you need them. Just briefly, we'll be covering a little bit of background on PPG, because we do know we have at least one new member here and some new staff who might need a very short, non-technical refresher on what PPG is and why we're doing it. But we'll focus most of our time on issues that we've uncovered and that hospitals have helped us uncover since we released confidential data in September, how we're addressing those issues, and what our plans are for moving forward with the public release in 2012, and hopefully continuing to partner really closely with stakeholders throughout that process. So as I noted, I direct the Division of Health Policy at MDH. That division's work covers a lot of policy ground, so you'll probably see me sitting at this table talking about other issues at different points in the session. I don't want to talk too much about that, but I do want to very briefly acknowledge the role of the Health Economics Program, which is part of that division. The PPG work that we're going to be talking about today is conducted by the Health Economics Program. But outside of that work, HEP monitors trends in the healthcare marketplace. So you will regularly see publications that are produced by HEP related to trends in healthcare spending, cost estimates, insurance and uninsurance, trends in premiums and cost sharing, information from the biennial healthcare access survey, which allows us to look at trends in insurance and uninsurance around the state. HEP also very regularly provides technical assistance to the legislature and others on issues related to cost, quality, and access. I say that just as background because HEP's role as an independent, objective analyst of the full healthcare marketplace is something that we take very seriously. That independent role is the reason why the analysis of HEP is so regularly included as part of any new initiatives that are designed to address access, cost, and quality. In addition to PPG, the Health Economics Program also implements the statewide quality reporting and measurement system, which is another part of the health reform law. So we're going to be giving you a lot of information in a short time. I'm going to give you the very quick summary of what PPG is, first in technical terms and then in layperson's terms. So using the language from the statute, PPG is a system for providing comparative information to consumers on variation in healthcare cost and quality across providers. It requires us to put together a uniform method of calculating providers' relative cost of care and relative quality of care. And the relative is important because we're not just comparing against existing national benchmarks, but we're comparing against each other because we know we do have a high-quality state here in Minnesota. So if you want to move forward, you need to compare against that existing high-quality pool. The PPG statute also requires us to come up with a combined measure of cost and quality for providers. So what does that mean? When we talk about the concepts of cost and quality together, what we're really talking about is value, as the commissioner alluded to. Value is essentially how much quality you're getting for the money that you spend. This is a concept that is very familiar to consumers. It's a judgment we make very regularly when we are purchasing anything, whether it's a car or a piece of clothing or a meal. You want to get the highest quality X that you can get for the money that you have. And we don't always make the same judgments as consumers. Some consumers are willing to pay more for higher quality, some may not be. But if you don't have the information out there about both sides of that equation, you can't make a decision about where you're going to get the best value, whatever it is that you're purchasing. But that's a new concept when it comes to healthcare because that's information that hasn't been available for consumers or for payers before. We talk about quality. We're starting to talk about cost, but we've never had a system before where we can bring those two together and talk about that intersection of cost and quality. That's why this system is so potentially transformative, as the commissioner noted, because it offers us an opportunity to look at how we purchase care differently, both individually and as a state, as a purchaser of health care. So we want to look at those two things together and look at where we're getting value for the money that we spend. So it's not about saying that high cost is necessarily always a bad thing. There are providers that are higher cost, and they're providing higher quality for that cost. And that's not necessarily a bad trade-off. But that's information consumers need to have in order to make choices, and that's information that payers need to have in order to make decisions. It's also information that's useful for providers so they can figure out how to move the needle on either side of that equation. I'm going to skip the next slide, which gives a little bit of background from the Governor's Transformation Task Force and 2008 health reform, so that Mr. Gildemeister here to my right can talk a little bit more about the process and what's been happening over the last few months.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stefan Gildemeister, and I'm the director of the Health Economics Program in the Department of Health. And my plan was to show you, because I love data and I love graphs, to show you a couple of slides sort of to back provide background information, sort of why we're doing PPG and what we're trying to address. But I'll skip this in the interest of the priority that is really on the process that we have employed to conduct this analysis and on where we are and what challenges we experience. But if you have an interest, it's in your slides, and if you have questions, I'm happy to address that. So the statute, the provider peer grouping statute, authorizes two types of analyses. First, we're required to look at the combined measure of cost and quality for the provider's patient population as a whole. We refer to this as total care. And secondly, we're also required to look at care for people with certain health conditions. So we're looking there at people at a subset of the total population. And we're doing this separately for hospitals and clinics. And on the hospital side, the conditions that we're looking at are pneumonia care and care for total knee replacement. On the physician clinic sides, this extends to asthma, coronary care, coronary disease, congestive heart failure, and diabetes. And under a very aggressive timeline, we're required to conduct both types of analyses annually, both for hospitals and for physician clinics. I want to give you a few key points about the process that the department is required to use in conducting this work. So essentially, the law requires that we consult with stakeholders throughout the process. It builds in a review, a formal review period in which providers can validate the data, request additional information, ask questions, and appeal for the results if they have concerns over the validity of the data. And a public release of the vetted results to consumers takes place 90 days after providers have confidentially reviewed the results. And then health plans, including CGIP, the Department of Human Services, and political subdivisions that provide health insurance coverage, are then required to develop products based on PPG results, based on information on value after we've 12 months after we've publicly released the information. So because this work has such potential to be transformational and to be innovative, it's been guided since the beginning by a set of principles, and they include the following. PPG will only use existing measures of performance. So yes, while we're innovative in how we're approaching this, we think it's valuable to work with data that has been vetted nationally and that has been in the public's eye for a while. To the extent possible, and again, this is new work by national standards, so there are limited examples out there, but to the extent possible, we'll follow nationally established methods for assigning these, for creating these composite measures and for assigning performance scores. We seek to construct methodologies that are as inclusive and as fair as possible, making sure that we exclude as few providers in the process from the analysis as is possible, and understanding how important it is to the success of this work that we involve stakeholders in the process. They have a formal role throughout the process, and I'll talk about this next. In practical terms, stakeholders have been partners in this work in a number of ways. They have formed the initial advisory group as well as the technical panel that provided information to the advisory group. Stakeholders also play an important role in advising on specific technical issues throughout the process. So before we actually conducted the analysis is when we work with the advisory group. Throughout the process, we work with the reliability work group and the rapid response team to get a real quick and actionable suggestion on our methodology. And stakeholders offered also feedback on the design of hospital confidential reports and public reporting prototypes that are currently under designed by the Department of Commerce. So the process of stakeholder input has proved really valuable throughout the work, and in some ways has made the work possible in the first place. And I think it will become clear as we step through the rest of the presentation. So we've talked a little bit about why we're doing the work on provider peer grouping, why it's important. I told you a little bit about the process that we're following. Now I want to talk about where we are, what challenges we faced, and how we've been addressing them so far. So as you saw in the earlier slide, the first step in the process really is to share results confidentially with providers for review process. That exists really simply to give us the opportunity to review and verify information and be able to address questions before a public release occurs. So as part of our first confidential release in September of 2011, and this is work now that I'm referring to primarily on hospitals, so we are required to conduct this work for hospitals and physician clinics, but the bulk of the work really has been happening on the hospital side. So as part of our confidential release in September of our first results, we held regional meetings and conducted webinars with hospitals. And it turns out these were really important meetings and important discussions because we had the ability to hear from hospitals about their worries of how the publicly developed methodology played itself out with the data. So we developed the methodology sort of in abstract and on the basis of national work that has been done with really good input from stakeholders. But once we fed the data through the analysis, we found that there were some things that we learned that we needed to look at further. So there were methodological issues that we've heard about, but also fairly quickly, we have to say hospitals raised concerns about the completeness and potential accuracy of data. And we study them and confirm those. And in researching the issue, I'm saddened to report that we identified others. Moving on to the next slide. If I were to reflect on the review process, I would say yes, the review process has worked in that we were able to identify data issues that I've listed here on this chart, and that we have the opportunity now to correct also some methodological questions that we didn't anticipate dealing with. But in all honesty, I have to tell you, we would have much preferred to identify these data problems before releasing them to hospitals, and we would have liked to be the ones to have identified them in the first place. But I can tell you the process of hearing concerns from hospitals, researching them, identifying the reasons underlying the concerns, realizing that we should and could have identified them on our own, has been a tremendously educational effort for us, for me personally, for the department as well, and very much so also for our contractors. So we've learned from these challenges, and we've put in place formal quality control mechanisms really at every step, and we're making sure that we're following them, since we did have quality control mechanisms in place in the beginning. But as part of our effort, we are also really looking for ways of validating information that this research is based on before early on with providers before providing them with results. Since we discovered the range of issues that I've sort of highlighted in the previous slide, it's been really our highest priority to keep providers informed about how we plan to correct the issues and how we plan to move forward. And we've done this in a number of ways. We've sent a letter to hospitals in October sort of recognizing what the problems were and assuring folks that we would not release results based on the compromised information. We had a number of conversations with hospitals and health systems, conversations that I think were very positive and very constructive. We talked about our progress in the monthly conference calls that we hold with interested stakeholders. And then most recently, on January 10, we held a public meeting with hospitals that we also broadcasted through a webinar, where we very carefully stepped again through the process of the challenges and the mistakes that we had in our initial analysis, and discussed what modifications we were making and how the modified release would change as a result of sort of the cumulative effect of these two dynamics. And also at our January meeting, we communicated to hospitals our plan to delay releasing findings from the initial hospital specific analysis and focus instead first on releasing summary results. So this slide summarizes some of the technical information that we presented at the January meeting. I won't bore you with it unless there's some among you who really want to engage in this at a knee-deep level. Happy to do that, by the way. But I would make the following points on this slide. The changes that we've made between September and now, and the date that we're releasing this information confidentially to hospitals, are fairly significant. So this has not been tinkering on the margins. The changes that we're making are recognizing comments that we have received from stakeholders through multiple mechanisms. And in case of risk adjustment, for instance, and that's the technique that we use to make real apples-to-apples comparisons between hospitals, we will take the opportunity to get input from our advisory group and which providers, of course, are members of, and ask them to help us decide which method is the most effective to choose moving forward. I may have alluded on this topic a little earlier, but we think, and hospitals, I believe, agree quite emphatically that it's important for the success of the research that they are able to validate the data that are underlying the analysis. But because data privacy is of great importance to us in general, but to this project in particular, and because of state and federal privacy provisions that we have to obey by, we're not able to share information with hospitals at the level at which they prefer to see them, which is really at the individual level.
Mr. Could I just a brief interruption there? I don't want to delay your presentation too long, but there have been some significant questions raised about the privacy of data and the appropriateness of garnering this encounter data and then processing it for purposes of comparison. Can you speak very briefly to what measures are in place to protect people's privacy and the privacy of their medical data?
Be happy to, Mr. Chair. So the data comes from the data is that we're using for the analysis comes from health plans. But before the data is going into the data warehouse, into the research environment that enables us to conduct this analysis, what health plans do is they actually encrypt the data and strip all identifying information from the data. So the data that we're working with does really not have any information on that allow us to identify individuals. It's really clinical information. It identifies gender and the age of a patient, so identifiable information intentionally is not part of this data. We have very strict rules for how this data is to be managed to avoid things that you've recently heard in the newspaper or read in the newspaper, for instance, that a laptop gets lost and there's all of a sudden identifying information on that. So number one, our data doesn't have identifiable information. Number two, there isn't really a way of taking individual record-level data from the research warehouse because the only information that comes off is can only be aggregate. So any information that is printed or that is downloaded has to sort of meet requirements that at least 11, at minimum 11 cases are included. So accidental data spills and intentional data spills are really prohibited by this. By this mechanism. And I should say the rules that we set up are stricter than the rules that we require to operate under CMS data use agreements. So we think we're doing a pretty good job here. It's of high importance to us, and I think our record speaks quite well for us. Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Yes, please. We'll take a question real quick here from Representative Huntley, and if you can maybe note your questions, members, I'm open to being a little more organic about it, but if we could maybe let him finish up, I think he's probably got five more minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Gildemeister, can you look at, say, readmission rates for some hospital procedure, and you'd have to follow that that patient, know it was the same patient? How do you find out that if you don't know who anybody is?
Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, thank you for that question. Yes, readmissions, of course, are a really important aspect of improving quality of care. The way the encryption mechanism works at the site of a health plan is that it uses the same encryption key to encrypt information on individuals across the healthcare system. So to the extent that individuals were admitted at different facilities, they would have the same scrambled identifier that we that sort of lets us track them and lets us understand sort of whether there was a readmission that occurred, you know, within a 30-day window, for instance. I should say about the encryption key, and here we're getting really technical and a little bit outside of my principal field of expertise, but the encryption key works in a way that it can't be undone. So it's sort of a it's a one-way encryption. It can't. There isn't a key that will undo that on the back end. And again, this is intentional to make sure that that the data is really considered private and not identifiable by researchers, by all contractors, and anyone else who's working with the data as part of the PPG analysis.
Thank you.
So the point that I was at is that I was talking about how hospitals are looking for information to legitimately to validate the results that they have, that we are unable to give them the data that they're looking for, but they were working very aggressively with them and looking for ways to give them more aggregate information that help them understand, okay, so the PPG analysis is based on, say, 2,000 admissions. Are these similar to the admissions that we really have? Are these really our patients? And so we can look at diagnostic information, we can look at age, distribution of age, distribution of gender. Again, keeping in mind that we have small cell standards that protect the privacy of anyone in the data. As you recall from the introduction, in order for the results from PPG to be to really be able to increase transparency about cost and quality, it needs to be available to consumers to help them in their decision making. It needs to be accessed by payers to help them reward value in the healthcare system. Providers, of course, as Diane mentioned, are also an important audience of the data, since it is they that ultimately who ultimately have a way of changing the quality of care and affecting the cost of services that they deliver. So, but to meet these combined goals, provider peer grouping results need to be publicly available. They need to be easily accessible, and as we've mentioned a couple of times, they need to be actionable. So, because the most current data available to us right now is from 2008 and 2009, and because it's already 2012, shocking as it may be, we think that the PPG results that we have available right now do not form the right basis for comparing providers to each other. Much has changed for providers between over the last 4 years. So recognizing this, we've made the difficult decision, as I mentioned earlier, to only release summary results using the current data from 2008 and 2009, and sort of by implication what this means, we're not releasing individual level hospital results until we have more current data available to conduct this analysis by the end of 2012. So what do I mean by summary results? We'll present a narrative discussion of the results of cost and quality at the state level, and we might contrast general trends on quality and cost by region, perhaps by hospital sizes, but in all instances those comparisons will be constructed in a way that hospitals are not identifiable from the comparisons, either directly or by inferring from the summaries that we're providing. Again, it was a difficult decision to make because we've really worked 3 years towards producing this result. This information, as we've mentioned, is really important to consumers who are required to bear an ever greater share of healthcare costs. They're looking for tools to inform their decision making on value. But we thought it was the right decision, and we believe with a summary report, it'll still give us it'll make an important contribution to the discussion on cost and quality, and it'll be the starting point for making improvements in these two areas. We've begun and have more formal discussions with the three audiences over this period, in which we hope to talk about what this data means, why it's important, and how it might be used by the three groups. And in the process, we hope to partner with the stakeholders on this educational effort as much as we have had on the methodological work that we've done to date. So I've thrown a lot of dates at you, dates of data, dates when we report something. It seems useful to show you a little visual about what the timeline might look like. You have it in black and white in front of you. I think if you have a chance to look at a screen, it might be more clear what we're aiming at here. So there are essentially two set of boxes in front of you. The light blue boxes refer to the current data that we're working with, where we're producing modified results, and essentially this will play itself out under the process that we've discussed. Sometime in late spring, we hope to have results ready for a summary report sometime around May. The pink boxes then describe our effort using more current data, and in this case using 2010 data. But also what I've shown over the summer here is a period where we plan. So we're between two versions of the analysis, and it seems to make sense to really revisit some of the methodological questions, see if there are other ways that we can try to be more cutting edge and look for ways of further improving the analysis. The clinic side I'll abbreviate because we've not done so much work, but essentially these are the timeline that we estimate. Working with physician clinics, data and stakeholders that we think will begin as we move forward also with the hospital analysis. And the point that I wanted to make on this slide, so thanks for the reminder, Diane, is the same principles, the same thinking that we've used around hospitals is what we're using also around physician clinics, and that we only use we won't use information from 2008 and 2009 to publicly report. We have learned a lot on the physician clinic analysis, and we'll sort of use those learnings as part of the clinic work. So I'll wrap up, since the chair indicates I should, with a quick slide by really summarizing quickly what we're aiming to do in 2012. We're planning on working to develop educational materials for consumers and providers, and here we hope to be working with the Hospital Association, the MMA, providers, and other stakeholders. We think it's important that we spend time discussing with providers how this information can be actionable for them. Again, it is they who are looking for ways to improve healthcare delivery and to reduce costs, and we believe this analysis that we're conducting can help them in their efforts. We need to develop a public reporting platform both for the quality measurement system and for the results of provider peer grouping, to make this wealth of information easily accessible and searchable by consumers as they conduct their healthcare consumption decisions, or in more less geeky terms, as they think about obtaining healthcare. We think it's important, and we've heard that from others as well, to bring together a technical work group over the summer to address some of the issues that we think merit revisiting, and taking all of this together, we believe that it'll put us in a place to release accurate data on total care and total quality of healthcare services that, as the commissioner has directed us, is actionable, reliable, and timely, and really will help transform the delivery of healthcare in Minnesota. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Gildemeister and Ms. Redrick and Dr. Ellinger. Members, I was just getting to that, Representative Liebling. What I think we'll do is we'll break. What we were going to do is have the MHA and MMA come up next. I think what we'll do is take some questions now for the department, and then have MHA and MMA come up. We'd like to give them their 15 minutes of time here, too. So if we want to take about 5 minutes here. I've got a list of Representative Benson, Representative Barrett, Representative Abler, Representative Quam, Representative McDonald, and Representative Liebling. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question is for Director Gildemeister. Just a couple of questions. I've not spent a lot of time in looking or perusing the information, but I am aware of a couple of things that are concerns to the providers. And one is to make sure that the process is transparent in terms of being able to duplicate the outcome. If they were given the same data sets, they should be able to take that information and come up with the same score. And I know I have a provider that is very worried about that. They've not been able to duplicate that. As we move forward, are there some assurances that they'll be able to do that?
Mr. Gildermeister.
Representative. We have a process built in to challenge our results. Quite frankly, my goal is that no hospital takes advantage of it, so that every hospital is in a place where they feel they don't need to appeal the data because they're confident with how the analysis has been constructed and the method used. So yes, we are eager to engage with hospitals. We have done so with a range of hospitals since September. I think there are good conversations. There are conversations that we've benefited from. I think, not sure which hospital you've been talking with, but those that we've been talking with have felt that I think they've had some inroads in a better understanding what we're doing and having a chance to tell us what they're worried about. I should say, Representative, the law has sort of some... it reaches to a limited group of claims in the state, so there are some folks who your hospitals might be treating that are not part of our analysis, sort of by design in state law. So, for instance, the uninsured are not part of our data set. People who have VA coverage or who have Indian Health coverage are not in the analysis. Folks who are not Minnesota residents are also not part of the analysis. That said, I think your providers can probably take out those claims as well in the analysis, and we can do a fairly close comparison, and certainly I'm confident we can assure your folks that this is definitely representative and but I'll let them have the last word on that. Actually,
follow up, Mr.
Representative Benson,
Director Gildermeister. There's apparently been some disagreement in terms of the validity of the information that's been provided, because you've already acknowledged that. Is there any thought given to bringing in possibly in the interim here a PricewaterhouseCooper to validate some of the numbers, or to take a look at the systems that were used for both data collection and the results? And I have a follow-up on in terms of correlation sensitivities, if I could ask one more question after this.
Sure.
Okay.
Mr. Gildermeister, do you want to answer this first one, and then we'll...
Mr. Chair, Representative, nothing against PricewaterhouseCooper, but I think we're pretty well prepared to give hospitals the peace of mind that they're looking for. And that's our personal goal. If we're not able to do that, we don't succeed, and I think another vendor won't help with that. We're working with some very bright contractors. We have a really successful team. I think we've made mistakes. All of us have. but as I said, it's been really educational, and I can assure you that won't happen again. I wanted to have a follow-up point. It escapes me, Diane. Did you want to?
Actually, if I can jump in quickly, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Roderick.
Just related to both questions, you know, as Mr. Gildermeister alluded to in his slides, one thing that we really have been working hard on over the last few months is looking at what data we can provide to providers so that they can do that internal validation process and ensure that we really have complete and accurate data. We are operating under some restrictions related to state and federal privacy laws, but we've given hospitals a sample report that shows what additional data we'll be able to provide to them. Right now, that's sort of abstract to them. They haven't seen it in the context of the rerun of the data, and so I'm not sure how confident they are in that right now. But we will be providing as much data to them as we can so that they can feel reassured, and we really do want them to contact us and work through it with us. When we hear about individual hospitals' concerns and they can bring them to us, we can often walk them through how we've gotten to the data that we have.
We can. Representative Benson, follow up.
And I apologize, this is probably getting into the weeds of the process, but as I looked at it, I noticed in terms of scoring and the final scores in some categories, that it only took about 0.2% change, and the score went from 1 to 10. And I look at that, I mean, I had stats in my MBA classes, for example, but that would seem to be, in terms of sensitivity, mm-hmm. a huge variation. And I wonder, that can have a significant impact and an outcome when you have that differential.
Yeah.
Mr. Gildermeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a really informed way of looking at the data. I applaud you. So there are a couple of ways in which you can approach sort of the question of assigning points on performance. The way the advisory group suggests that we move forward is that we sort of tie ourselves to a process that the CMS is using, the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services is using, that for their value-based purchasing system that is being rolling out, I think, in 2013. Interestingly, I think the dilemma is we have heard sort of the pushback on our on their method since their method hasn't been validated yet, but I can sort of anticipate what hospital responses is when they come out with their method in 2013. The other way is to do what you're suggesting, where you actually so the initial method used by CMS is sort of you take 10 points and you assign it across the distribution of performance. I think the other method is a more careful one where you use, or a different one, where you would use statistical significance to drive difference between points. I think the outcome would be that there's much more clustering going on, but I think you can decide that's okay and go forward with that. I think that's one of the questions that we need to and that we should discuss sort of in our summer institute, I want to say, with the advisory group. Also, I wanted to add one more point. The measures that you're referring to are measures where everyone's performance is really great. We call them top-down measures, and the assigning of points was really silly. And again, in this case, we followed CMS's guidelines, but we knew that that was probably not such a good approach, and we've changed that right now. So, you know, when somebody has a perform where 99% of their patients have good performance, and another provider where it's just 98% of patients have the same have good performance, they should not have a drastic difference in points. So essentially, I agree with you. We've made some changes already. We need to have this discussion more thoughtfully with experts, including experts from the university again, and providers and in the provider community over the summer, and we will.
Representative Benson, very good. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick questions. Mr. Gildemeister, I'm wondering, maybe a succinct question would be, to what degree of certainty do you have that the information that you collect and then disseminate to the public is accurate as it relates to each of the providers that are part of this project? Would you have a percentage accuracy that you would be willing to commit to?
Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so the accuracy really flows from the data that we're using, and if we're confident that the data, and this data has been used for payment for healthcare services, so it's the result of transactions between providers and health plans upon which insurance companies pay for care. So I think there's a, by definition, there's a certain level of accuracy built into that. As we pull information in from health plan into our data systems, we have a fairly methodical process to sort of say this data is good enough, this data is not good enough. So there is a method of identifying what information meets sufficient data quality needs. We have made mistakes, and now we have looked formally for ways to really benchmark the information to other data that is out there. So that helps with it. But if you're asking me, do I have a percent number to tell you this is, you know, 80-90% accurate, that's going to be very difficult. What I can tell you is, for instance, that we have about 93-94% of claims that we expect in our analysis. What I can also tell you and providers is what information we've taken out from the analysis to make sure that it is statistically valid and not biased in the process. So it's more of a mosaic than a single number. I'm not sure if that helps.
Representative Barrett.
Just a follow-up. I was probably looking for something a little bit more definitive, but that's okay. Mr. Eidrich, I guess the question I have for you is, can you just give me a lay of the land for... This started in 08, I believe, through legislation. Was there a budget created for it? How much resources, state resources are being used for this project, both internally as it relates to FTEs and also any external costs you might have? And especially as it relates to communicating to the public, because I think that's your end goal, is you want to communicate this information to consumers. So I'm particularly interested in the part that relates to communicating to the public. What's the process for doing that? And again, what are the resources that will be used to communicate, but also just overall from the beginning, What's the resource burden been on the state for this particular project?
Dr. Ellinger or Ms. Rydrick, who wants to handle that one?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Barrett. I don't think I'll be able to provide actual dollar amounts and FTEs today. We do have an ongoing appropriation to cover this work, and I believe it's in the neighborhood of $2 million per year. Per biennium. But I would prefer to be able to get that information confirmed with our CFO before I give you definitive information on that. And we can come back to you with some information on the overall costs, so historically what they've been and currently what they are, as well as the number of FTEs. I do think it's important to communicate that to all of the audiences that we perceive for this information, which include consumers but also providers and payers. So I think they do need to understand how the system developed and how it is supported, and you know how we're going to maintain it going forward. So we need to make sure that that's part of our communication as well.
Okay, members, we are going to go past 3:30. I know I mentioned we were going to kind of target that, but we have until 4 o'clock, and so we'll take whatever time is necessary. Representative Barrett.
Just a quick follow-up. My question regarding the consumers was related to the results of your project.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have a plan for communicating those results to the consumer? Mm-hmm. And if you do, what is that plan?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett. We do have plans for that, and Mr. Gildemeister alluded to that just briefly in the last slide. You know, consumers are explicitly one of the audiences for this work in statute, and we see them as one of the primary audiences for this. I think what's not useful for consumers is to just get, you know, a spreadsheet of information plunked down for them, information that's not user-friendly for them. So one of the big tasks ahead of us in 2012 is to develop a public platform for those results and develop it in a way that's user-friendly and that's searchable for them. So you can look, whether it's by geography, whether it's by size of hospital, whether it's by certain characteristics, we want consumers to be able to find that information in a way that is helpful for them. We also need to think about what type of information is useful for them. People often think of PPG as a ranking. We don't tend to think of it as a ranking, more as a comparison of providers. So you may have some providers who are in this high-cost, high-quality quadrant or a low-cost, high-quality quadrant. We need to make sure that consumers can understand that and that what they see are real differences between providers in the terms of the value that they offer. That's going to be a challenge that we have this year, is to figure out how best to share that with consumers and then how to educate them about what that means. Again, we hope that we'll be able to work with MHA, with MMA, with other groups that represent consumers to make sure that we're getting that input from them on what they need to see.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Abler, I have Representative Quam, Representative McDonald, Representative Liebling, Representative Franson, and Representative Murphy in that order. Representative Abler.
Well, I won't repeat what's already been answered, so I appreciate that. I do have I think it's a question. I hope that you are as responsive as you say you're going to be. I just looked at a little word in your last thing about potential methodological refinements. I think you absolutely have some methodological problems with your thing. And I think that your credibility is on the line here. I supported the work in 08. I think it's a good $1 million to spend to see what we spend, what we get for billions that we're spending. But we want it to be valid. And I met with you privately, but let's repeat the three things that we talked about there, which I think solve your matter. You need more categories of providers. If it's, and the hospitals are the ones most noticing this, but as you move along to other provider groups, you need, you know, just more categories. Because the benchmarks are so few. And there's just way differences in certain hospitals and certain kinds of clinics, urban, rural, specialties, whatever. And I think that with all regard to the experts on your panel, I think you need to lower your benchmarks in those testing things to maybe 30 percentile to make them embarrassingly low, so you actually can, so a zero is really a zero, and a one is still pretty lousy, and a nine really counts for something, which would then, on your top dog thing, that solves that issue. So if they're all scoring at 99%, that's maybe a 10 for all of them because they're so good, or a nine. And there's no harm in that compared to risking a zero if you're 1% below. And it's not saying that a 30 percentile is adequate. It just means you're starting to measure at that level. And if you're getting all ones and twos, I'm not going there. And so people would appreciate that. And the third thing is, in some of those categories, where a hospital, this is where the category hospital or groups help by having more benchmarks. If you're only being judged, if you don't do six of the seven things in a list and you're judged on one thing, then it's not a valid score. And this is what I cautioned you all about mm-hmm. in the beginning, was that there aren't a lot of benchmarks. Mm-hmm. So I think with those sort of things and being truly responsive, engaging and listening well to the people in the room who are deathly afraid of being miscategorized, that I think you'll have a really good product that Representative Huntley and I can cheer the fact that we worked down on then and is law. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you. You don't have to respond unless you want to.
Mr. Chair, I do want to respond. We do recognize that this product can only be valuable if everyone sees it as valuable. So that's really our standard, and we understand that that's we're going to be held accountable by that standard. So I think if that wasn't a question, I still agree with what you've said.
Representative Quam, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gildemeister. Building on what Representative Abler touched on, I felt that there wasn't sufficient graniality so that different stages of cancer, more challenging and more complex cases, there didn't seem to be appropriate weighting there. The other thing is, I know you cannot allow the formula out, but it'd be useful probably to understand what factors you have derating and normalization for, such as readmittance or referral, so that if a more challenging case comes forward, the hospital that gets the more challenging cases is going to have a lower probability of success. Even initial admittance, ambulance services, depending on the severity, will send someone to a trauma center. And that should somehow be differentiated, on those cases. And so that's why it'd be nice to understand, what factors you have the derating and normalization for, and just more fully understand how you are compensating for the actual and real differences in the cases.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, no, all very good points. To some extent, I think we're addressing them already through methods. To some extent, I think we need to look at the methods over the summer and see if we can make improvements. But I think I want to make a general point and say it's perfectly legitimate for hospitals to say to us and clinics to say to us, we want to understand the method. We want to understand with how you're dealing with complex cases. We want to understand with exactly the kind of issues that you brought up. And this is not the black box. The advantage of working with us as the entity to do this work is we have nothing to hide, and we want to make sure that, the risk adjustment scores are publicly available, how we deal with outliers is publicly available. So that is something that will be packaged as part of the information that we're releasing to hospitals. So, I want to be on record here and saying I can't, short of releasing information that is identifiable, I don't see that there's any data that we shouldn't make available on a summary level that really helps hospitals understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. And, as we're doing with risk adjustment, we're open for them to say, well, the advisory group gave you some advice, but we want you to reconsider that, again, as we're doing with risk adjustment in a couple of weeks or so.
Okay, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I had was asked. I pass.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate some of the questions that have been asked. It's been a very interesting discussion. I pulled out the statute here just to look because I'm interested in the appeals process. And we heard about that in a general way, but what the law actually says is that if a provider appeals, and let me just say, I think this is pretty important given the goof up in their first round. So I think people are kind of looking to see, well, if should there be a, should we be unhappy the next time around, how much opportunity are we going to have to contest this before it goes public? And so what we've got in the statute is that the provider has to clearly indicate the reason they believe the data is not accurate, and I'm just paraphrasing here. There are three things. Secondly, provide evidence and documentation to support the reason the data was not accurate. And thirdly, cooperate with the commissioner and allow the commissioner access to the data and relevant to resolve the dispute. And then it says, if the provider doesn't meet these requirements, then the appeal is considered withdrawn. So that puts a lot of pressure on the provider to come forward. And with what you said before about how the provider doesn't really get access to the data, that gives me some cause for concern. And it strikes me, I understand the data privacy thing, but it strikes me as very odd that a hospital is turning over its data and then can't get its own data back to verify what you're looking at. Because what if you've taken Hospital A's data and used it on Hospital B? How are they to know that? So, you know, I want to hear, I guess, if you've got specific rules for this, if we need to change this in the statute, because this strikes me as, you know, just, it's really, hospitals are going to be, you know, this is a lot of risk for, there's a lot at stake here without much of an appeal process.
Who wants to handle that? Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, fair question. I think if I recall the statute correctly, too, it specifies that the department is to set up an explicit appeals process. So the guidance in there is what we need to take into consideration. So the process itself is actually a little bit more involved and gives hospitals more opportunity to disagree with us. From the way you cited this statute, it would appear as if we can say to hospitals, well, you haven't made your case, go away. That's not quite possible. There is a process built into the system where another entity can say to us, no, they have, go back and fix it. So we'd be happy to make available to the committee the formal appeals process that we have used. That is much more fair, and it really takes the guidance that the legislature gave us into consideration.
I would appreciate that.
It's an excellent question. I had some of the same concerns, Representative Liebling. Ms. Reidrich, you wanted to respond as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling. I just wanted to add to that. You know, when we did the confidential release of data in September, we had fully intended to go forward with the public release in 90 days. And when we released that data, there were several hospitals that were considering filing appeals at that time based on the information that was in there and the mistakes that they saw. And the way we approached it then is the way that we would approach this going forward, which is they contacted us, they let us know that they were considering filing an appeal, and then we worked with them to give them additional data where we could to help them understand what was in the data and help them come to that determination of whether the data were accurate and whether they needed to file an appeal. So in addition to the formal process that Mr. Gildemeister outlined, we also see our role as, you know, we want them to be confident in the data, and we want them to be comfortable with what's being released to the extent that that's possible. So we do intend to deal with them the way we did in September, which is to give more information where possible, try and assist, try and help them pinpoint any issues that might be there. So we feel it doesn't do us any good service to have inaccurate data, so we want to make sure that we work with them on that.
Thank you.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for anyone up there that can answer. But what I'm looking for is, what is the department's definition of quality? Who wrote that definition? And if there's any subjectivity as to what's defined as quality? So in other words, if you say someone is providing health care that is lesser quality, where are the objective standards that I can use or we can use to come up with that same determination?
Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson. Well, I'm not a clinician, and so, you know, it's a good question to ask me. How do you determine quality? And it's not really the economists who are doing this work, but it's really the work has been happening at the national level. It has been happening actually in the state by organizations like Community Measurement, where they use data, where they use research, where they work with clinicians to determine, identify measures that are used to evaluate whether the process of care is meets high quality standards that sort of have been agreed on in the community, and whether care is at levels that meet standards, whether cost is at standards that is at a level that meets standards as well. So I think the bottom line is we have 46 measures in the quality and on the quality composite side of the peer grouping analysis, and we'd be happy to share with you what those are, what the data sources are, because that data comes to some extent from CMS, to some extent from the Association for Research and Quality at a national level. So be happy to make this available to you. But the bottom line would be none of the measures of quality that are being used are measures that we thought up. They're all measures that sort of have been nationally validated by NQF, CMS, and other organizations that know a lot more about quality than we do.
If I could ask real quick, I know you have a follow-up, Representative Franson, but on that point, is it Mathematica or is it Minnesota Community Measurement that's doing the analysis for the PPG or providing the data set?
We have, Mr. Chair, we have two contractors. One contractor aggregates the data for us, so it takes all the feeds from 60 or so payers and builds the database for us. It's Mathematica, under our direction, that sort of does the analytic work. And provides the research that we feed back to our technical advisory groups, and then takes those directions from us and them, and perform the analysis. Community Measurement is a contractor on the quality side, so Community Measurement collects data from physician clinics on healthcare quality and on hospitals, and they feed the quality data into this analysis.
Very good. Representative Franson.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. So I want to ask one more question here. And actually, I could spend all day asking questions, so I hope we can do this again.
We don't have all day.
Who owns the warehoused patient data of Minnesotans? Is it the state of Minnesota, or do the patients own that?
Mr. Gildmeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson. You have me a little stumped there, and I wonder whether I should consult a lawyer here. I think the state has made the investment to build it, and given the state the authority to build the data warehouse, so I'm not sure how that translates into ownership. But Diane, do you have a
thought
on that,
Mr. Chair and Representative Franson? I think my response would be similar. The legislature granted the Department of Health authority to collect this data and to establish the all-payer claims database. I don't think either of us are. I could use the phrase above my pay grade to say who decides, you know, who the ultimate owner of information is about an individual.
Maybe that's a question we could have clarified, if that's possible, and bring that back. I think it's a very good question. Representative Franson, do you have another?
Just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. So we're not sure exactly who owns the patient data, if it's the state of Minnesota or if it is the patient. But let's say I, as a patient, don't want my information warehoused in Maine or warehoused anywhere, and I want sole control of that information. Can that be done?
Mr. Gildmeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, I haven't thought about this. So the information that we've selected is not really, at this point, doesn't really choose who's in or who's out. Health plans roll up the data, strip identifiers away, and put it into the warehouse. So haven't thought about that question really at this point.
Yeah, these two questions might be ones that we'd like to have a little more detail brought back about, but good questions. Thank you, Representative Franson. Representative Murphy, I understand you're going to hold your questions till after the presentation, next presentation. Representative Norton.
Just a quick one. Most of the questions have been answered by different members from my community who are on this committee, so a lot of them have been taken care of, and I appreciate that. One that I had as I was listening, when, particularly in the portion that Representative Benson was referring to, where you have the ranking, the 1 to 10, and the scoring, and then you're going to plot it out, and I appreciated the high quality, you know, and the low. And what happens if everyone is close, and you lay it out on that same grid without a benchmark that might be a national benchmark? If you lay them out on a grid and you're going to let people in the state of Minnesota know that this hospital or this clinic is not doing very well, but in fact that clinic in comparison to the other Minnesota clinics, but in comparison to nationwide, it might be very high. So you might be making a judgment thinking this particular clinic or hospital isn't doing very well. But I guess I see it as kind of the Garrison Keillor, you know, effect. And, you know, if we're all good in a particular area in the state of Minnesota, you might have people peeling away from a hospital that provides perfectly wonderful care. It just happens to be the lowest of its type. And so I'm wondering how will, the comparison is great, but how will they know if it's good?
Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, that's a really fair question. And I think we have a job to do to as we communicate this publicly, to sort of say, how do Minnesota providers compare nationally? Because we do know, and this is based on real evidence, based on some of the quality measurement data that we have available nationally, that Minnesota providers have a tendency to its being really high quality and performing efficiently at lower cost. To be careful that I don't lose my track here, but so it's exactly right what you're saying, that you could have a provider who compares to his or her peers favorably, but compares differently nationally. So it's entirely possible, and we need to think about a way of making that clear to consumers as they make decisions. What we currently do, or what we have thought about as we release this information to hospitals, is to compare providers to the average and say, are providers different from the average? So to make that one set of comparisons rather than compare everyone to each other. And so that's one strategy. I think there are other ways to think about what is a valuable comparison. And I think we talked about how asking consumers about what it is they're looking for and whether they're looking for to understand marginal differences, small differences, or whether they want to have sort of a tendency to a general trend of what constitutes high quality care or comparative high quality care and comparative high quality cost. So I don't mean to dodge your question quite a bit, but I feel that is conversation that we need to have, and it's in response to questions that we've heard from you, but also from hospitals who've made that point themselves.
Well, thank
Representative
you.
Norton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just think it's really important, in order for the efforts that we're doing in reforming the state of Minnesota on quality and cost, in order for it to be effective, it has to be able to be usable, as you mentioned yourself, and it's not meant to be punitive. And so I would ask that you really grapple with that issue a lot, so that what comes out there is actually helpful to consumers and they're not making judgments based on the way it is shared that might be dangerous to a local hospital who provides a wonderful quality of care at a reasonable cost, but might be the worst we have in Minnesota, but still might be wonderful compared to other states around us or even ranking in the nation. So I think it's going to be really important that it's usable in order mm-hmm. for it to be valuable and for our investment to have paid off. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norton and the department. We're going to have to wrap up the presentation here, but I want to commit to the members of our committee, we will continue this dialogue. The department has made that commitment to us. We know that it's vitally important. That's why we started off this session with this particular hearing. We know they're moving very fast, but we also know we need to make sure this is done right and that the end result does not cause unintended consequences. We know we share that commitment. So thank you for your time. Dr. Ellinger, brief comment.
This is a partnership between the Minnesota Department of Health, the hospitals, the medical association, the legislature, to try to get this right. So that your input has been very helpful today, and we will be very transparent in what we're doing and get the information back to you as best we can. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for your presentation. We will now invite the Minnesota Hospital Association, Minnesota Medical Association representatives to the testifying table. We need to be out of here by 4 o'clock, members, and hopefully we'll have time for a few questions here, but I know there are a number of concerns on the part of the provider and hospital communities. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I first would like, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association, and I would like to start out just saying thank you all so much for the very thoughtful questions that have been asked already today. You have already addressed many of the issues of concern that you'll hear me briefly touch on, but the questions that have been asked today really set the stage for what the Hospital Association's concerns are. The first one out of the gate, Representative Norton, when you look up at this chart. This is a chart that I know many of you all have seen before. It's produced by the Dartmouth Atlas. This is a national comparison of Medicare patients based on cost and quality. And if you look at the vertical axis, it is based on cost, and the horizontal axis is based on quality. And you will see there are a couple states that are a little bit higher on quality and a couple states that are a little bit lower on cost. But altogether, Minnesota healthcare providers are doing a very, very good job of delivering healthcare services at high quality, low cost. And it does make us very nervous about this project in general. How is it going to be to force variation amongst our providers when maybe there is not that much variation? And I'll get to that in a minute, but I did want to start with that slide. I do want to acknowledge that the Minnesota Department of Health, since the release of their initial report on September the 27th, has been trying to address some of these issues. To be quite frank, it might have been better off if we could have had some of those discussions a little earlier in the process. But since the first release of the report, we have been trying to address some of these issues. Mr. Gildemeister particularly mentioned the incomplete data. We heard from a number of our members that as many as 5,000 Medicaid cases might have been missing from the data. So there were some pretty big examples of missing chunks of data from the original reports. Also very concerned about old data. If it's going to be released potentially in 2013 and the original data was 2008, that was almost 5 years old. How really useful is data to a consumer that is 5 years old? I think the department is trying to address that as well. Also, on the issue of low volume scores, I think this is what Representative Benson was asking about, that if a hospital did not have enough cases in a particular category, they drop that category and then use their score on another measurement. So if you maybe didn't do quite as well on one measurement, that was then multiplied across the field of comparison. And that really isn't fair to a hospital as well. Misleading data, force variation, and this was, I think, the example that Representative Quam was using as well, that if a hospital had a score of 99%, they might get 10 points, but if their score was 98% or 97%, they might get 1 point. So they're forcing hospitals to look more different than they actually are. So what are still the problems that we're concerned about? And we're not quite sure if the Department of Health has really been able to address these remaining issues. Number one, the data by 2013, even if it's updated, could still potentially be 2010 data. So it will be three-year-old data. And even the department at our meeting with them on January 10th acknowledged that the agedness of the data is an increasing liability to how useful really this will be for consumers. Also, the issue of force variation. This is a big concern of ours, and we really need to make sure we technically get that right. The other issue that I think Representative Liebling mentioned that I thought was very important was the risk adjustment. What do we do for hospitals that are trauma centers? What do we do for hospitals that do medical education? They're going to have higher costs. And is that fair that they're compared to hospitals that don't do medical education? Take the issue of a neonatal unit. The average length of stay in a hospital is about 4 days. While in a neonatal unit, they're about 34 days. So by definition, you're going to have some services that a hospital does that produces higher costs for them. Also on your quality measures, if you think about this, hospitals that do a great deal of cancer care are sometimes the last effort that a patient makes to save their lives. And they're likely to have a higher mortality score than a hospital that doesn't do some of those activities. So we have to be very, very careful that we don't penalize and make some of our best hospitals in this state that are taking on some of the most challenging cases look like they're not delivering quality care. So it is extremely important to us that we get this right before this information is released. What are the remaining issues here and what can we do? And why was the state involved with this to begin with? The issue number one is that this information has to be publicly reported. Number two, the current law says that health plans have to use this information for the sale of at least some of their commercial products. And the other issue that we've heard about is that this information could be made available on the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. You can see why providers care so much about this information being released if it's potentially going to be used on the exchange. So what are our suggestions? Where do we go from here? We have listed four that we think are extremely important. Number one, allow providers to verify the data to be used in the measurement of their cost and quality. We have to be able to know that that is our data and that it's being used accurately. It also enables us to learn from it to say, yes, this is accurate, this is not. We need to require that any display differences of the quality scores be based on statistically significant differences and on relevant measures. We need to delay or remove the requirement that health plans use this data as results in their insurance plan design. And we think it would be helpful to have a stakeholder group that oversaw any release of data in the future to make sure that it was reliable before the results were published. And this is the proverbial split in the road, guys. This is what we have to decide kind of this legislative session. Are we going to be able to make this product and this process to have the data be accurate, the data be current, to allow providers to be able to verify the data, and to make sure that any differences in how the data is displayed is based on relevant and statistically significant information? And if we can't do those things, do we need to take a different direction? And I just want to close by asking the committee two questions. And in looking at these two questions, is it possible to get this right, and is it probable that we can get it right? So I brought with me today a colleague of mine, Mark Sonnenborn, who's our Vice President of Information and Quality. He actually understands this stuff and what the measurements are. And I brought him along in case you all want to stump me, who you see all the time. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Ms. Kricke. Mr. Renner, if you want to introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, Dave Renner with the Minnesota Medical Association. We represent over 10,000 physicians, medical students, and residents, and those are the physicians who will be practicing at the clinics for which a lot of this reporting is discussing as well. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I also want to commend you for this hearing. Since we've been involved in this since 1998, this is the most in-depth peer grouping has received, even when we first passed it. At that point, I think there was a lot of interest in getting this reporting out and more data to consumers and even more so to purchasers, and really focusing on development of health plans products and using it for the tiering products that we see in the market today. And the Medical Association has been very supportive of these efforts. We have said we think the use of this database that the state has created creates us a great opportunity if it's done correctly. If it's not done correctly, we think not only will it be a waste of time, but it will lose all credibility. And we've said over and over again, I think from the provider community, at least from the physician community, in a sense you get one bite of the apple here. And if this data is good, providers will use it. So I'm going to just comment on four quick issues, and I'll try to be brief to leave time for questions. We also share concerns about the accuracy. And again, I give credit to the department. They have decided to reassess and have tried to bring providers, especially in the hospital community at this point, into these discussions to try to improve this. Our concerns about the accuracy come from two areas. One, number one, this is a complex problem. This is a project that we don't think anywhere else in the country we've tried to do. And this is not easy. And you've heard from the discussion today that the complexity and the difficulties we're having on questions of how do you define quality, how do you ensure appropriate arrayness of differences and those types of things. Secondly, again, I would agree with what Ms. Kricke discussed and changes that are needed and the issue of trying to make sure we can verify this data. We do also share some concerns about the current law, especially on the clinic level. It's much more difficult to verify the data because we are looking at this total cost of care. Patients go to multiple clinics, and there is the issue of attribution. So which clinic do you get attributed to, and then how can that clinic verify that data? That's something we want to continue to work with the department and you to ensure that we can reach those goals. The second major issue I want to talk about again, and I won't repeat a lot of what Ms. Krenke said, but we also agree that improvements are needed to the law. We think there is still value, but we want to make sure that the issues that she's talked about verification, timeliness of the data, transparency needs to be included. Number one, and the biggest change we would also agree with is the law right now requires health plans to use this data in developing their products. We think that should be at a minimum made permissive. And if it's good data, I guarantee you the health plans will use it and consumers will use it. If it's not good data, we have a real problem with requiring that be used in development of products. And we would share the concern about the data right now we're looking at is 3 to 4 years old. Third, and this is probably one of the more important pieces, I would say, I would ask you to distinguish and separate the issue of the peer grouping project and a statewide database. And I think there are two separate issues. We can debate about whether we're moving in the right direction with peer grouping, but we continue to believe that there is extreme value in having a statewide database of quality. From a provider's point of view, our providers have never seen this kind of information. We get individual information from each health plan. Each fits in a little different form. We know exactly maybe what we're doing with the patients that go to that health plan, but we've not been able to compare it across and say how we're doing. And I will tell you, providers, physicians, their whole training is based on fact and science. And if they are given data that shows that they are an outlier and it's credible data, they will change their behavior. So we think, there's great value in having a statewide database. And finally, as I say, MMA has supported this moving forward, and mainly because we think this has been a movement forward in the area of measurement, quality, and cost. This was promised to give more transparency. We think that we are moving in that direction. As you've heard today, there are some concerns about whether we need to continue to work on that. Secondly, this does get us this comprehensive picture among all payer groups. So I think that's an important piece. But I think in order, again, restating that and in conclusion, that in order for this to be done right, it's got to be credible, valid, statistically significant, timely data that we all trust. And we stand ready to help with that, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you all may have.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. We have about 2.5 minutes, members, and I want to get to at least a couple members' questions who've lined up. Representative Murphy, Representative Kiffmeyer, and we'll start the line. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have more of a comment, and I've had a chance to talk with a lot of the provider groups and with the Department of Health. I was a supporter of this in 2008, and I remain a supporter, and I want to commend everybody, Department of Health, the provider groups, Chair Gottwald today, for making sure we can have a deliberative discussion about this. As I have said, the providers, and as a provider, I can't imagine that we would shirk or step back from the idea of creating quality measures and transparency. And I think we need to figure out how to get this law right, and we need to move forward with it. Because I do think a key ingredient in tamping down costs in healthcare is to make sure consumers have access to really good information and they can navigate that system. And they don't have that information right now, not really. Not that they can judge in sort of an independent way. So for a lot of reasons, but mostly because I think a key ingredient of the solution to our healthcare issues is engage consumers. We have to move forward with this. And I'm committed to working with everybody who is interested to try and make sure we get it right for the sake of the consumers, for the providers, and for the state of Minnesota and our reputation as leaders. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think in the same vein, it's more of a comment as well, as I think we've had some good questions. Good decisions are based upon good information. And I think we have consumers who want to and others who want to as well. But if what we're looking at here in PPG is not accurate, isn't current, isn't verifiable, therefore isn't credible, therefore it isn't good enough to make a decision, which is the whole point. And until it is credible and it meets those kinds of things that we all agree to, then we should make sure that the law allows for that, to give the Department of Health and our providers time to get it right. But if the data is 3 years old, especially these days, the way things work, it just isn't going to work. So I think giving them more time to get it right, because I think poor information harms our providers, harms the Department of Health credibility. We don't want to do that. If we're going to be the first in the country doing this sort of thing, then at least make it a model for others to follow on how to do it right. In the meantime, take the time that we need and also lift some any mandates that are with that so that we aren't premature in taking action on this data. Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Very good point. Representative Huntley, you get the last word.
This, again, Mr. Chair, has a comment. And, you know, we started some of this earlier in Minnesota, and community measurement's one of the pioneers. And when community measurement first measured the quality of health care, if you just look at diabetes, 6% of the people in Minnesota were getting the kind of care that they should have gotten. 6%. It's now up to about 25 because we made those measurements and people have started to change. And if we don't do it, it's going to get done anyway. I have something from May, the Bloomberg Business Week, and it says, WellPoint ties payment boosts to health outcomes. WellPoint is one of the largest health insurance companies in America. They're going to do this. And the question is, are we going to let the them make the standards, or are we going to do it as a state? And I think we're better off. And I will quote one thing here, because I think this is the fundamental problem with our healthcare system, is we have not measured things before. And it says here, I hope some of you know who Peter Drucker was. If ever an entire sector of the U.S. economy was guilty of committing one of Peter Drucker's greatest sins of mismanagement, confusing activity with results, it's the healthcare industry. And I will tell you that at the same time this came out, another newspaper, same story about WellPoint, the head of one of the two national hospital associations in America said, well, we don't have good outcome measurements yet. You know, they've been in business for 100 years and they don't have good outcome measurements. This is what this is all about. We need to get it done right, but we certainly need to get it done.
Very good. Members, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody for their input on this. This will not be the last we discuss this. We all agree it's vitally important we get this right. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, January 31st at 2:30, right back here in room 200. And our meeting is adjourned.